This is Alan Schimmel.
And Mitchell Ashley.
And we haven't done this for a while. It's the Security.exe podcast.
Wow, it has been a while. But it's good to be Mitchell, back again.
Mitchell, we haven't done a podcast in, it's got to be 3 years, it's, 2 years?
It's been 3 years, at least 3 years, maybe a little longer.
Well, what have you been doing?
You know, I was in a isolation chamber, you know, cryogenic freeze, and I just was brought out this week. No.
Judge Ed. You know, no, I'm reminded of like when Dean and Jerry, Dean Martin, came on the telethon one time. Jerry hadn't spoken in 20-something years.
We're not quite said that.
Anyway, seriously, Mitchell, it's great to be on a podcast with you again. Yep. And I mean, I try to stay busy podcasting here and there. I don't do it as often because I don't have a great partner to do it with.
Perfect.
But absolutely, we're going to try to do this more regularly. Mitchell, for our listeners, though, what are you up to these days?
Well, I've actually, for the last 3 years, I've been doing a lot of IT work. Actually, I run IT for an organization called Cable Labs, based out of Louisville, Colorado. We also have a facility in Sunnyvale, California. And Cable Labs is a consortium for R&D for the cable industry, both North America and internationally. So I have that challenging environment, which is a lot of fun, of how do we support projects that involve vendors and cable companies and employees and people from all over the world. We're helping creating the next generation of cable technology or products and services that will eventually end up into those cable systems. So I've been working a lot on collaboration tools, unified communications, cloud-type architectures. We have a completely virtualized environment. We do a lot of projects that I have to spin things up very quickly and tear them down very quickly, and it can be a big data project. It can be just about anything. And so really gotten heavily into the virtualization. And, of course, I still wear my security hat and do that kind of thing, too. So been a lot of hands-on, but it's been a lot of fun. And I have a great team here, and I enjoy what I do very much.
So sounds like not much you've been up to.
Yeah, and in my spare time.
Yeah. That's exciting, Mitchell. You know, what's nice is it sounds like you get to dabble and really dig in more than dabble on a lot of different kinds of projects and a lot of different technologies that a lot of people are dealing with today.
I do, and it's exciting because it's things that tend to be on the forefront rather than things that are 20 years old, if you will. So,
absolutely.
You know, my challenge is to be ready and stay ahead of the game as much as possible for the kind of requests that I might get. So sometimes I'm successful, sometimes not, but that's the fun of it.
So, Mitchell, one of the things you mentioned is that it sounds like Cable Labs is using the cloud to spin up, you know, infrastructure real quickly and of course, take it down. And you know, I think today was the last day of the AWS reInvent conference out in Las Vegas at the Venetian.
Mm-hmm. You have some folks out there, yeah.
Yeah, I have quite a few friends who are out there, Mitchell, and I'm telling you right now, I wrote about this in my Network World blog today. I am marking it on my calendar. I'm not missing that show next year.
Well, I went last year to the first year that they had it, and they were pretty overwhelmed by the amount of people that came. I think they were planning, I don't remember what the number was, but they ended up with like two or three times more many people showing up and registering. And it's a big deal. And I didn't get to go this year, though I'll try to make it next year. I remember there were some really insightful conversations and presentations. I remember I went to one session where a gentleman was talking about how having sort of this elastic cloud and this, you know, unlimited, if you will, compute and storage, et cetera, and how that had changed, for example, how they roll out upgrades of their applications instead of doing the phased approach where you can upgrade segments of your servers across whatever data centers you're located in, how they would create a complete mirrored environment with the new version of their application and flip the switch on the load balancer and push it all to the new servers. Well, you can do that when you have that much capacity and, you know, computing bandwidth available.
But you know, Mitchell, I don't want to turn this into a DevOps conversation just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's more to doing that successfully than just unlimited bandwidth and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of automation and a lot of work involved in that. It's more than just the resources, if you will.
You're absolutely right. I think that's sort of the lesson from the cloud. If people that have dove into it and realized that, at some point it's more than just spinning up servers, right? And installing a load balancer or whatever. It's how do you run that whole environment and how do you manage it? And there are tools. There's Puppet and Chef and all kinds of things that can help you with that.
Sure, and there's Capistrano, an airline, and I'll tell you, Mitchell, I was at a DevOps conference out in Boulder last month, and one of the more interesting presentations I saw was from the folks over at SendGrid, whose presentation was, when have you outgrown the cloud?
Mm-hmm.
And a rule of thumb that they proposed was that if you're spending more than $50,000 a month on your cloud infrastructure, you could probably do it more efficiently, and you've grown to a sufficient size where, having your own private cloud rather than a public cloud, such as an Amazon, makes sense. Now, I'm sure there are people who agree and disagree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I wanted to mention, though, too, Mitchell? How do you know your conference and your product, or in the case of Amazon, how do you know they've arrived? I read an article today that both Rackspace and IBM, I guess through SoftLayer, they're probably their two biggest competitors,
mm-hmm.
had stuff going on outside the Venetian to try to pick off customers. IBM had buses running up and down the main drag in Vegas with advertising on it, or the buses were running, but they had IBM advertising,
mm-hmm.
that they actually host more websites than Amazon does. And then Rackspace had girls in short shorts standing outside.
It is Vegas, after all.
Well, you know how much I love a good booth day, Mitchell.
Oh, I know. I remember watching you at your best in Vegas.
Yep. So they had girls in short shorts, handing out postcards and stuff to attendees at the at reInvent to go over to Treasure Island, where Rackspace was giving them free food and drink, mm-hmm. and having some sort of anti conference or something. But
the uninvent or invent over here.
Uninvent, right? Reinvented. But in any event, no pun intended. I mean, when IBM and Rackspace, your two competitors, are trying to pick customers off of your conference, your conference has been successful.
You have arrived. Speaking of reading some things, since I couldn't go, I've been following remotely. And we got to put a couple of links in the podcast when we post this. But you were talking about getting to the cloud, using the cloud being more than just, resources. There's a couple of good videos that they put together, Amazon's put together. One's about cloud bursting, essentially, how do you get to the cloud and leverage it. The other is about cloud migration, and these are what they're calling reference architectures could be an IT organization or product organization. If you have something you need to migrate to the cloud versus if you're starting greenfield. And I think that kind of, we'll see more of that kind of reference architecture, because everybody I talk to that's in the IT world, they're all asking themselves, if they haven't already started experimenting, or maybe they are in the cloud somewhat, that's the question, is how do I get the cloud? Is it a private cloud first? Is it a hybrid architecture? Do I just bite the bullet and put some things in production in the cloud? Do I do development in the cloud and keep production locally? There's all those sort of questions. Not just about how do you do it, but how do you learn to do it. So I think that idea of reference architectures is a really good one, and is going to help a lot of people.
Sure. Mitchell, we'll definitely include some links to the YouTubes on that when I post this. And you bring up a ton of interesting points there, Mitchell. Amazon is, AWS is certainly a public cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a year or two ago, the fights raging between, Amazon's open APIs versus CloudStack versus OpenStack, mm-hmm. and open source, and private cloud versus public cloud and hybrid cloud. I mean, clearly, Amazon's public cloud is about 8 times larger than the nearest public cloud out there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously pretty significant. However, you know, to give the private cloud folks their due, certainly IBM SoftLayer and Rackspace are host, as well as others, are hosting some pretty big private clouds. But I think for now, Mitchell, the real winner is hybrid clouds, people who can do private clouds but can still, you know, somehow link into a public cloud infrastructure such as AWS when they need that type of, you know, N plus scalability.
I think it's a big leap for an existing IT infrastructure to say, let's just move it all to the cloud. That's a big commitment, and of course, as whenever, risks and learning and all that associated with it. So a hybrid approach is actually really good, because now you yep. can leverage your existing, how you run things today, learn what you need to learn about how do we run production applications, how do we update production applications, how do we do dev and test, do we do DevOps, and do those things in the cloud. And, you know, an easy stepping stone, if you will, is SaaS applications, where you aren't actually running it yourself. And then maybe the next step is connecting your infrastructure into some cloud provider like AWS or Amazon. I think also one of the challenges with getting to the cloud with legacy applications is, depending on if you're doing a more of a hosted model or you're moving to Amazon where you're using a lot of their services, it may take a lot of reengineering for your application or your infrastructure your apps run on to be able to leverage those services within Amazon. So some things are easier to remove than others. And that's just a lesson we all going to have to learn. I think the more we share about those experiences, the better we help each other figure out how we leverage the cloud and take the best advantage of it.
You know what, Mitchell, and I've seen this in speaking to people about cloud, about DevOps and other things. The cloud's really good if you don't, you know, if you're not, when we're not talking about moving a legacy mm-hmm. environment into it. I think the cloud is really caught on with startups. And, you know, Mitchell, you and I are both startup veterans who've done multiple startups, mm-hmm. and we have the scars to prove them, to prove it. But you know what? The whole idea, I'm involved starting up in an accelerator, a business accelerator down here in South Florida, mm-hmm. and I was talking to a couple of my co-founders budgeting for technology. And they said, well, we got to get a couple of servers. You're going to need a router. You need rack. And I'm like, time out. What servers? What are you putting on those servers? Mm-hmm. You know, and so newer companies, Mitchell, startups today, they take the cloud as a given, and they don't have that legacy that needs to be retrofitted onto a, you know, it's built for the cloud, built on the cloud, mm-hmm. and they eagerly take to SaaS based monitoring and SaaS based provisioning and SaaS, you know, all of these SaaS tools that help them with the, you know, the reference architectures and so forth. Then in the larger enterprises, Mitchell, again, it's I think the caboose of the train heading to the cloud are the people moving legacy stuff over. Mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing in enterprises are devs who, frankly, are tired of waiting for the IT guy to set up the server, to open the ports, mm-hmm. to give them the access. Mm-hmm. And they whip out their credit card and they open their own Amazon mm-hmm. instances. And they spin stuff up there, and lo and behold, they'll come and say, okay, we're ready to beta test this. Because after all, who uses QA anymore? QA is just another name for customers.
It's the Google model, right?
It's the Google model. And we're going to go beta test this, and they're not going to move it from the cloud back down to the legacy infrastructure because mm-hmm. it's already built up there. So now they beta test it. They're rolling it. Operations doesn't have a choice because they've been, you know, outflanked, if you will, mm-hmm. and they could either beat them or join them.
I think that's the key is you have to take a look. This is going to happen. It's just like BYOD, right? It's mm-hmm. not only is it going to happen, it's already happening. You just have to realize and be honest with yourself and say, let's help make this happen in a way where IT can add value. And, there's some other approaches, too, that you can take, which is whether it be a private cloud or maybe an internal cloud. You can use OpenStack and some other technologies to essentially offer a local compute facility where people can bring up their own instances and manage their own environment, as well as push things externally out to the cloud. And sometimes that's, though you aren't necessarily going around IT in that model, it can be more palatable to folks like legal and management and things like that. So there's other ways to that IT can step up to the plate and be a part of it, as opposed to just be the folks that were, you know, we got around them and now we're going to create our own shadow IT in the cloud.
Exactly, shadow IT. And but Mitchell, can we ever include the security guy in that?
The security guy, what's his role in all this? You mean the cloud needs
security? Oh, it's real easy. No, he says no.
No, you can't.
You can't do this. Well, don't you know there's some sort of compliance thing you're violating?
So,
this could be catastrophic. You know, I was at a conference the other day, Mitchell, or a week or two ago, and I actually had a guy stand up. He said, look, I'm a security guy, but let's be honest. Who's ever been shut down because of a security breach? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hear about these things, but they go away. But seriously, Mitch, I was reading a book, you know, Gene Kim's book, the Phoenix Project.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a review of it in Network World, I think it was last week. And it really deals just with this, not cloud per se, though there was some cloud elements to it, but more what you're talking about, you know, on-prem or private kind of computing environments and the role that IT, you know, that constant friction with development IT, mm-hmm. who's blaming who for the bottleneck. It reminded me, Mitchell, of when, you know, you and I and Raj and some of the other guys were starting Still Secure, and we read that book, The Goal. Remember The Goal?
Remember The Goal, yep.
So the Phoenix Project is The Goal updated for an IT department mm-hmm. rather than manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. It's a great book.
And, yeah, excellent. And that's exactly what we're dealing with here, right? And we can't lose sight of the fact that, hey, the engineers in development, the coders and developers, the guys in IT operations, the Phantom QA team, and even the man who says no, the security guys, right? We're all part of the same company, of the same IT infrastructure, whose goal it is to further the goals of the business, and that when sales or marketing or finance, they don't distinguish as much between IT ops and security and dev. Those are all just geeks to them. Those are all just IT people.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether it's being done in the cloud by dev or if it's IT, right?
They just know, is it working? Is it accomplishing what it needs to do? Is it solving a problem or pain? Or accomplishing a goal, and that's what that's really what the Phoenix Project's all about as well.
Well, maybe we can take another podcast. I've got a lot of ideas for future podcasts, and one of them could be the role of IT. Or I actually wrote a blog post a while back about what is the role of the CIO in today's and future environments.
That's a great question. And what's the role of the CISO as well?
The CISO
is there a role?
Is there a role? You know, I took the approach of that basically IT needs to be the broker or the gateway to getting to those kinds of services. So if, you know, if dev can go out and build their own environment, great. Then what IT can do is step in and help them with when they need to reconnect back into internal systems or networks or infrastructure. That can be their role, you know, because you know that's most likely going to happen. If it's a different scenario where maybe someone in the company isn't ready to go do that themselves, IT can help them, right? Okay, we'll set up the account and do the billing for you, and here you go, here's your login, go for it. Oh, you need more help? Great, here's some resources we can give you to help set up an environment and get you running. So there can be a spectrum of kind of broker, if you will, services to help people get to those resources in the cloud. And I think that's more of what IT needs to be. It's certainly the approach that I'm taking.
Sure. You know what, Mitchell, in the weeks to come, too, when I'm ready to talk more about it, this whole thing that you're talking about, the role of IT, the role of development, the whole DevOps thing, is a is it, I've written a lot about it recently, but it's also something I'm going to be launching, hopefully, a major initiative around, and maybe we'll announce it on the podcast. But I actually spoke, Mitchell, to an old friend of ours, John Curry.
Oh, yes, John. I had lunch with him about 6-8 weeks ago.
Yep. So John is now a DevOps engineer at a company called Simple Energy over in Boulder. And you know, he's living that life right now.
He is. He had a good launching pad from kind of what we did together at Still Secure. He worked with Alan and I at Still Secure. It wasn't quite what you call true DevOps, but
no.
You know, it's definitely, I think, good proving ground for him to move into his new job.
Sure. But Mitchell, I think of that server room that was always locked that you and the boys were going in and out of compared to companies now. It's a little different.
It is a little different.
Just a little bit. Always those requests to buy all those monster, you know, double quad core processors.
More servers.
More RAM, more servers. Who, you know, think about what a good time those boys would have had. And you know, well, they were mostly boys. But, you know, what those guys would have had now with the cloud. But anyway, Mitchell, you know, that it's definitely changed the way IT is being done, the business of IT.
Absolutely.
Between that, mobility, you know, it's just a different world.
Well, we started talking about the reInvent conference this week. They also, Amazon also announced their VDI workspaces. Essentially, it's sort of the Citrix model, the hosted desktop in the cloud, desktop as a service, I guess you can call it. And they have four tiers of services, starting with standard on the way up, and you can get Office 2010 Pro included with them. I think their pricing was starting at $35 a month and went up to $75. So you're talking about, you know, starting a company now, you don't even necessarily have to buy computers for everybody.
No.
And create those virtual
and you know, the funny, Mitch, I got to tell you, I have a friend of mine down here in Florida who actually has a business on managed virtual desktops. And well, you know, he includes Microsoft Office with it. And I was talking to him about this very thing. And the funny thing is, he supposedly has best pricing from Microsoft as a Microsoft Gold, Premier, whatever partner. Mm-hmm. And just the base licensing for the Microsoft products in you know, delivering a hosted Office and a hosted desktop with Office comes to just under $30 a month.
Wow.
Then you got to figure in the cost of hosting it,
mm-hmm.
right? And supporting it. It's killing this guy. He had a deal he was about to get moving with like a major university, one of these online universities, as well as a brick and mortar aspect to it, and frankly, it gave them reason to pause because his pricing was closer to the $75 a desk. Mm-hmm. A desktop, and you know, they came back to him and said, "Hey, bud, you better come down to 30 or 35," and there's no way he could do it.
Well, I wonder if Amazon introducing this service will help put some pricing pressure that maybe Microsoft will have to lower it so the other guys can be competitive. Not to say everybody's going to rush and put their
or is managed desktop a big boys game?
Good question.
Does it drive these little integrators or whatever you want to call them out of business?
Sounds like the ISP business.
Exactly. We've been there. We've lived through that one too, Mitchell.
Yes, we have.
You know, someone told me today, one of the nice things about getting older is when you go talk to these younger people who think, you know, the world is all new and everything, you know, you've never seen it. It's really... it's not. It's the same kind of things repackaged. I was at a conference here in Florida yesterday called South Florida Has Talent, and there was a direct marketing panel on, you know, today's marketing using social media and all of that. And I just closed my eyes, Mitchell, and substituted the term one-to-one marketing. Remember that term?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Substituted that for social media marketing. Mm. And it was the same exact pitch. It was the same exact story. It was the same exact strategy. It was the same exact advice.
Same idea, just delivered in a different medium. social media.
Yeah, but it all goes back to don't leave your common sense at the door, mm-hmm. right? Just use your brain, mm-hmm. and it works. Mm-hmm. You know, but I love that one thing down here in Florida, we have no shortage of, I'm a social media expert, a social media advisor. Uh-huh. I mean, what? Hey, that's cool. You know, it's good living if you can get it, I guess.
Facebook, too. I guess it's
well. Yeah, we're all social media advisors. Anyway, Mitchell, we're over 25 minutes, and we barely scratched the surface.
We're just getting started.
12 things we had. But you know what? Seriously, let's try to do this at least once a week.
I think it'd be great. I'd love to.
And we'll get in there. And also, if anyone has any questions on this or anything Mitchell and I are up to, and we'll both talk more, Mitchell, about some of the things we're up to, because I have a couple of things I'm love to talk about. I wanted to talk about RSA as well and Security Bloggers Meetup and Blogger Awards. Yeah. But we'll get to it. Anyway, you can write to me at info@securitybloggersnetwork.
Right.
And if it's for Mitchell, I could pass it along. Unless you feel like putting your email out there.
No, Mitchell. You're welcome to email me directly. It's Mitchell@MitchellAshley.com.
Fantastic. So Mitchell, it's great starting this again. We will do another one. Well, today's Friday. Let's try to do another one next week.
That sounds like a great plan. Love to do it.
Okay. Hey guys. Absolutely. I hope everyone enjoyed listening. And until next time, this is Alan Schimmel.
And Mitchell Ashley.
And you're listening to security.exe.